Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni, and here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. We honor the Church's heroes on this Feast of All Saints. And Joan Lewis takes a look back at the past week's events here in the Vatican. Well, today we start with the Gospel reading for today, November the 1st, the day the Church celebrates All Saints' Day. This annual solemnity was instituted to honour all the saints, known and unknown, and at the behest of Pope Urban IV, it became an occasion to supply any deficiencies in the faithful's celebration of saints' feasts during the year. But first of all, Sean Patrick Lovett reads from the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 5.
When Jesus saw the crowds, he went up the mountain, and after he had sat down, his disciples came to him. He began to teach them, saying, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are they who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the land. Blessed are they who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be satisfied. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure of heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Blessed are they who are persecuted for the sake of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when they insult you and persecute you and utter every kind of evil against you falsely because of me. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward will be great in heaven."
Thanks there to Sean Patrick Lovett. And now we follow that reading with a reflection by Father Leon Bangura.
This Sunday, we celebrate the Feast of All Saints. Normally, when we talk of saints, we think of people with extraordinary holiness that the Church has recognized and proclaimed officially as models of holiness. However, the feast we celebrate today honors all the friends of God, canonized by the Church or not. Let us note that those men and women whose victory we celebrate today were common people like us, and they lived with many hard realities like ours. They were not extraordinary people. They only lived in an extraordinary manner of love for God and for neighbor. Many times, we think that people are born saints. No, it is not like that. In fact, each of us has the seeds of holiness in him or in her. For example, God created us in his image and likeness, and we are baptized in the name of the Trinity. These two things leave in us the imprint of God and the potentials of holiness. However, these potentials of holiness can only grow in our lives when we live according to the Beatitudes, which the Gospel reading of this Sunday presents to us. The first Beatitude calls on us to be poor in spirit, that is, to acknowledge our constant need of God. There are occasions in Africa where we see people going to church only when they have economic hardships, but once they get a job, they distance themselves from God. To be a saint, one also needs to be gentle, that is, one should treat his brothers and sisters with tenderness and compassion, no matter who they are. One can also become a saint when he or she has a passion for what is right, when one denounces the injustice and the exploitation of the poor by our African governments or private employers. In our countries, we see many cases of domestic injustice, especially against women and children, the weaker sector of society. To be a saint, one also needs to be merciful with others, especially to those who might have caused great evil to our tribes or our clan or our families. Let us remember that revenge can never be a solution to family, clan, or ethnic conflicts. We can also walk the paths of holiness by being peacemakers in our communities, torn apart by wars and conflicts. We can do this by teaching our young generations the culture of love and peaceful coexistence. Over and above all, in order to be saints, we need to remain faithful to Jesus when persecuted for our faith. To conclude, let us remember that God wishes that each of us be holy. Holiness is God's project, not our own. No matter how spiritually strong we are, we cannot arrive at holiness all by ourselves alone without the help of God. He is the source of holiness. We therefore pray for the strength to open ourselves to the sanctifying grace of God, that we may also join the choirs of saints in heaven. Amen.
Thanks there to Father Leon Bangura for that reflection. As I mentioned earlier, November the 1st is a special day in the liturgical calendar. It's the day set aside to remember and to honour all saints. They were, and still are, the heroes of the Church. Those who lived by the teachings of Christ, many of whom were prepared to give their very lives for him. They are the saints of the Church, who, over the last 2,000 years or so, offer an example to Christians of the virtuous way to the Lord's heart and to the kingdom of heaven. To reflect on this special day, my friend and colleague Tracy McClure sat down with Father Bernard O'Connor, an official with the Pontifical Congregation for Eastern Churches.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here with us
today with your wonderful
smile and happy personality. Listen, October 31st, we have to start
with
that.
Oh, yes.
Halloween, the night of ghosts, goblins, and witches. And November 1st, though, is the feast for the heroes of the Church, the saints who represent all that is good and virtuous. Quite a contrast, don't you think?
Rather so. But you know, there's a wonderful point that's being illustrated here. Halloween literally means All Hallowed Evening. It's a sacred evening in preparation for the observance of All Saints. And on November 2nd, we have All Souls Day, and these must be taken together. But there's a theory in spirituality that is wonderfully appropriate, that when goodness is highlighted and emphasized in Christian life, evil cannot remain content. That evil will rise to the cause of trying to distort and devastate the holy. And in my honest estimation, the New Testament church and thereafter were very, very conscious of the evil one and of temptation and devastation attempts at the good. So Halloween, in a certain sense, reflects that. If you are going to celebrate saints November 1st, be assured that that will be taken up as a challenge to you from forces that are motivated for causes other than the holy.
But are we giving our kids mixed messages with these fun, partying Halloween nights?
Again, look historically. Historically, throughout the early history of the Church, especially in the Middle Ages, it was connected to a spiritual reality. The mistake we've made and the double messages we send are separating ordinary, quote, secular life and the life in relationship to God. We've made the disconnect in our culture and society. And so naturally the young people are only going to see it as a festival of good time to kind of joke around, kid, and celebrate in whatever way they choose. It's just like Christmas. We've confused Saint Nicholas with a Santa Claus. We have confused the Nativity of Christ with a winter solstice. And so consequently, by divorcing the holy from our ordinary reality, we've completely abdicated all presence for it.
If November 1st, the Feast of All Saints, if it doesn't fall on a Sunday, it's quite likely that people are not going to even realize that it's occurring. Isn't that a very sad reality today?
Oh, it's a tragic reality. When the Holy Father speaks about the issue of secularism and of relativism and these types of terms that he uses so frequently. What he's really saying is we are more and more living in a society which is not only heedless of the holy, but is becoming contemptful of the holy. And this, I think, is a serious tragedy. We can't expect ordinary Catholics to be mindful of the significance of All Saints and then All Souls, when the poor souls can hardly have enough religious knowledge to make the sign of the cross.
Mm. How important is it for us to remember and honor the saints? I mean, if you pick up any book on the saints, you'll see it's full of hundreds and hundreds of names, and literally going back 2,000 years.
Absolutely, absolutely. But let's think of it in terms of your family history. You were just telling me a little while ago where your husband works and where your sister-in-law lives. And these are special relationships in your heart and in your history, as they are in mine and every listener. This is part of our family. And to say that the roots, the origins of significant people in our family history with relationship to us have lost their significance is pitiful, because we're created for relationship. So what these feasts are telling us is that the ongoing relationship with those who preceded us are every bit as intimate to our well-being as are our personal and family relationships, for they are our spiritual family. So great significance.
Whereas we cannot remember our dear departed, let's say, you know, a mother or father, grandparents or friends who've died, we can't really pray to them. We certainly can look to the saints for help in our daily lives, can't we?
Very much. I like to tell people that the emphasis isn't so much on praying to as praying with. That in a sense of church as communion, those who we ask to pray for us, to pray with us, accompany us in our own spiritual journey. We see this illustrated wonderfully in the Angelus message for 2008, given by Pope Benedict, in which he reflects upon this continuity of relationship, of role models, of heroes, of persons whom we can look to and say, that's part of my tradition. This is part of my heritage. This is real and tangible. If I may, I'd like to just say that when we look at the lives of the saints, as you're talking about, to give them something of a quality of life, I like to use four terms. That the role of the saints with relationship to us represent incarnation. They make real our faith. They represent imitation, role models of faith. They represent inspiration, giving credibility and enhanced lovability, if you will, of the role models of the church. And then intercession. They respond to our prayer. They reach out to us, just as on All Souls Day, we will reach out on behalf of those whose journey continues toward a fulfillment of sanctity.
We can't, of course, finish this program without mentioning some of the great saints of the church.
There are so many. And people, I think, should certainly remember figures, you know, throughout history, like Joan of Arc, St. Lawrence, the martyr, and so forth. But there are also recently canonized saints or persons proposed for sainthood, which can be a wonderful reminder of the problems that we face that they have also faced. I'm thinking of the canonized Saint Mother Alphonsa, the first saint to be canonized for India, a woman who knew intense physical and mental suffering, who spent most of her 36 years on a sick bed. Well, how many people can identify with that kind of tribulation? Many. I'm thinking of a lady who knew servitude and persecution. Abuse of women? Very common. Saint Josephine Bakita, born in Darfur in Sudan in 1869, but who literally learned when she discovered the gift of faith in Christ that she could go back to her captors and go back to the people who caused her enormous physical anguish and say, I have a gift for you. Now, there's an example of faith. Lorenzo Garrido, who died only in 1971 from Spain, and who was a journalist afflicted with various paralysis, with blindness. And despite the incredible intensity of his afflictions, every time one aspect of him was taken away, his use of his right arm, then he learned to write with the left. Then he lost both arms, so then he learned to dictate to a secretary. There was an ability to be creative and determined, despite whatever hardship. And that is a wonderful message in our society, where we often feel so depressed and so overwhelmed. There is hope.
And a very warm thanks there to Father Bernard O'Connor, an official with the Pontifical Congregation for Eastern Churches.
And thanks, of course, to Tracy McClure as well. And now we take a look once again at the past week's events here in the Vatican. I sat down with our resident Vatican expert, Joan Lewis, to review some of the highlights of the past 7 days. So good morning, Joan, and welcome back again.
Well, today, gosh, looking at the news, I think we need an hour-long show. we have lots of stuff to cover, and sometimes the difficulty of having lots of things is that you're unable, unless you only pick two or three, to actually cover things in depth. But I think it's important for our listeners always to know what the Vatican's up to. I mean, here's what's been done this week, even if every single thing is not done in great detail. What the Pope is doing, what he has written, and what the church is, to get this overall general picture of, the Vatican is not just a big papal mass on a special occasion or a big papal document on another occasion.
But that's what you're so good at, Joan. That's exactly, that is your talent, I think.
hopefully so. Give our people an overview. And we might start actually with a couple of announcements made this week. Mm-hmm. And something the two trips that were kind of alluded to actually in the past, in the first place, because it's really upcoming, the Pope will be going on November 8th. He'll make a pastoral visit to the Italian towns of Brescia and Concesio. And, of course, both of these are associated with Pope Paul VI. And
that's
most
right.
People say he was born in Brescia, but it was actually nearby Concesio.
That's
and the
right.
Pope will visit the house in which he was born. And this is to mark the 31st anniversary, really, of Paul's death, of course, in 1978. And it'll be a day-long trip. There will be a mass in Brescia, in the cathedral there, and kind of a spill out into the Paul VI Square. And in the afternoon, the Pope meets the organizers of the visits. He will go to the house in Concesio where Paul VI was born. And then he goes to the Paul VI Institute, and there's the awarding of the annual prize. Actually, it's not annual. It's every 5 years, the Paul VI. I had thought it was annual. The Paul VI Prize is given out, and it goes this year to a group, a series called Source Chrétienne, Christian Sources, actually. And
what is the motivation for this prize?
And it is given every year to a person or a group that has done a great deal, made a significant contribution to inspire religion, to religiously inspire cultures, mm-hmm. to make cultures focus on religion and on the religious aspect of life. And so that trip is the closest. But then another trip, and we're actually looking at 2010, but still this, time passes so quickly. 2010 is going to be here in about an hour.
Don't say that.
I know. It's kind of scary. But the Pope will travel to northern Italy, to the city of Turin, on May 2nd, 2010, to see the Shroud of Turin, which,
right.
of course, is that linen cloth. I think all of our listeners know that. That bears the image of a crucified man that many millions of Christians have believed for centuries to be the burial cloth of Christ. And it's interesting because I get emails on things like this. And no, the Church has not pronounced itself. We have Benedict going. John Paul went. I've forgotten whether it's once or twice now. I think there was an exposition the year that he was elected, in fact, in 78. But the Church has not pronounced herself on this. However, she also does not discourage people making pilgrimages to venerate a cloth that could very well be Christ, the one that wrapped the body of Christ. And the interesting thing is, this is probably the most studied relic, mm-hmm. Artifact, if you will.
It's pretty amazing.
In the history of mankind, yes, it's, exactly. Since it was discovered, since technology came about to be able to do carbon dating, so forth and so on, and a lot of the scholars studying this are people who are not religiously inclined mm-hmm. either. Some are outright atheists. I mean, they admit that. And so they're not looking mm-hmm. at this with the eyes of faith. They're looking at it with the eyes of science. Mm-hmm. And so much science points to 2,000 years ago. It's just, someday I'd love to do a whole show on that, simply because I did 6 months of research and interviews and reading on this years ago. And
I was going to ask you if you'd ever seen it.
And so that's the amazing thing. I've always had something come up. Years and years ago, 78, when it was, when it came out, when I had just moved to Italy and I had done this piece and so was doing this piece. And I was actually called, at that time I was freelancing, but I was called to work in Cairo in the office of the New York Times, where a very good friend of mine was bureau chief. So it, just things like that have come up. So I'm very excited about the trip myself.
I don't think it's always on show either.
It isn't.
It's kept in the cathedral, but only in certain periods can the public
actually... Is it taken out of its protective container. So, and anybody listening who wants to learn about this, by the way, and reserve online for the period of, I think it's April 10th to May 23rd, that the shroud will be on exposition. And the site is Sindone, S-I-N-D-O-N-E, Italian for shroud, sindone.org. So when you go to that, they have English and Italian.
And the Pope will be going, we were saying, in June, right?
He goes May 2nd.
He goes May 2nd.
He goes May 2nd. So it's right in between, between those, that 6 or 7 week period. So that's kind of something we can look forward to. And then looking back, we have big events too, because obviously the Synod for Africa after 3 weeks concluded on Sunday with final Mass presided over by the Pope, concelebrated by the African bishops and cardinals. And by the way, they wore Saturday, they had lunch with the Pope. That was in the atrium of the Paul VI Hall. And they were given chasubles, which they can wear, obviously, most of the year in ordinary time. Green chasubles with the Pope's coat of arms on the front. And the Pope wore gold vestments. It was a very wonderful celebration. Cardinal Turkson was telling me how very much he enjoyed the harmony between the African culture, the African music that they brought into it, and then, of course, the music of the beautiful choir of St. Peter's. So that was Sunday. But then you had Friday and Saturday wrapping up the Synod with Friday, the final message. Right. I put that on my website, on my blog.
It was so comprehensive. It touched on every single thing.
Every single speech that had been given for 3 weeks, any suggestion thrown out, any topic was in that. It was beautifully written. And it was in four languages, folks. So you can't say, I don't think you can say you can't read it. I don't think it was in Swahili. But in any event, it was in four of the principal languages of Africa. So very much worth reading if you go to the website, if you want to learn about Africa, its problems, its joys, its challenges. And the propositions then that came out a day later at a press conference in the Vatican pretty much mirrored what was in the message. Exactly. Mm-hmm. The 57 propositions that the bishops put together. Now, what happens with these is they give them to the Holy Father, who then uses them in consideration when he is writing his post-synodal document. And of course, we had a little bit of an announcement made Saturday at the press conference. It had been rumored, and I had put it on my blog, it had been rumored for quite some time that Cardinal Turkson was going to be called to Rome to head the Pontifical Council for Justice and Peace. And in fact, that announcement was made.
Cardinal Turkson of Ghana.
Yes, he was brought to Rome. Cardinal Renato Martino has retired. I believe he's 77 or about to be. And so the cardinal from Ghana will be called to Rome. He's a very amiable man. He's a biblical scholar. Yes. He's multilingual. And I have to tell you, just from one little personal experience interviewing him, I could see that he was a very, very humble man.
Would you like to tell our listeners about your experience? I think
it was
very,
so wonderful.
Very significant.
You're right. We met in the Casa Santa Marta in the Vatican where the Synod Fathers were staying. And as we were on our way to one of the small reception rooms to be able to talk and have the interview, as we turned a corner, one of the housekeepers was coming in from a courtyard with one of the great big carts that a housekeeper will have.
With all her detergents and
oh, exactly, detergents and brooms and things like that. And the cardinal, here he is, dressed in all of his red finery, and the red zucchetti, the whole thing. And the cardinal, we turn the corner, he goes right over to her and asks if he can help, puts his hand on the cart and asks if, you know, he can help. And I mean, I have to say, for me, that was a defining moment for this. That defined the man for me. This, he didn't pay any attention to who he was. He was just a human being wanting to help another human being. And I was very moved and touched by that. And you know what? That same quality came out, actually, during our conversation and in the interview. So anyway, big week, the ending
of
the...
So good luck to Cardinal Turkson and his new...
Good luck to him. Well, we'll see him
position.
In Rome. We
yes,
will probably right. both be talking to him on the radio. And but I have to say, with all the good news this week, there are so many things we haven't touched on, but there a person who was an institution, really, in the Vatican died Sunday, and that's Camillo Cibin, who headed security for decades and decades in the Vatican. He right. was 83. Right. He had 58 years of service in the Vatican. I mean, that is so phenomenal. And I was trying to think, who else has that? And the only other person I can think of is Saverio Petrillo, who's the director of the Pontifical Villas out in Costa Gandolfo. He came... he's in his 60s, and I know he came when he was like 18 years old.
Is he still in service?
Yes, he is. He came when he was 18 years old, and he's a lovely, lovely man. So... one other thing, there were other things in the Vatican. The Pontifical Biblical Institute celebrated 100 years. The Pope did meet people from that for a congratulatory speech. There was the papal message to the Armenian Catholicos on
right.
his 10 years of service.
That was on Tuesday, I think, right?
That was on Tuesday. But I think one other thing we absolutely cannot slide over was Monday's meeting between the Vatican and the SSPX. That's that traditionalist Society of St. Pius X. There's many, many things. These are the ones that broke away from the
right.
church in 1988.
Mm-hmm.
We had four bishops. Mm-hmm. whose excommunication was lifted, but now to bring them back into the fold is a huge long street. Our listeners have to understand that because a lot of the press has given the impression that, oh, wow, they're back in the bosom of the church. They're functioning prelates as priests, and they aren't.
They're not.
They are not at all. So there was a meeting to look at the doctrinal differences, and my word, if you look at what they had to discuss, the questions that they the things then which both sides seem to differ are the concept of tradition, the Missal of Paul VI, the interpretation of Vatican Council II in continuity with Catholic doctrinal tradition, themes of unity of the Church, Catholic principles of ecumenism, the relationship between Christianity and non-Christian religions, and religious freedom. So that is no small agenda. And it's important to note this.
So it's an ongoing process.
It's ongoing, exactly. This is not a one-time, it couldn't possibly be a one-time thing unless it was, you know, nonstop for night and day for months. Many issues, tough issues, big challenges. I think there's a sense of, you know, both sides are the immovable from their principles and so forth. So, it'll be interesting to see, and all of this in the wake of the church opening up to the Anglicans. We know
right.
that news from last week. So it'll be very interesting to see where they go with the Society of St. Pius X. And that will be news in coming weeks, I'm sure.
Thank you very much, Joe.
God bless.
Thanks there to Joan Lewis for that Vatican update. That's all from the English feature programme today and from me, Linda Bordoni. But we will be back at this same time tomorrow, so join us then. You can also listen to our programmes on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. You're listening to Vatican Radio's English programme. Laudetur Jesus Christus.